everything that we kind of teach and preach is you can do this during your everyday routines. You can do this during everything you're already doing. You don't have to carve out extra time to do speech. It's just kind of tweaking your interactions to build their language. And that is what, you know, that is our whole mission. And it's exactly why we did what we did. But exactly what Brooke was just saying, like talking through what you're doing in the moment that you're doing it. And we did that from the beginning with them, like the beginning. Like I think Stella, who's my youngest, she's the youngest of the five. And she's now, you know, 28 months old. But she, at like 9 months old, I would pour my coffee and she'd be like, pour, pour. And she'd say, hot, hot. And people were like, we would put on Instagram, people are like, what is going on here? Like, how is she even doing this?
But why did she do that?
Because every single day.
Join the Patreon to join the conversation. I have so many amazing guests on here that you're probably already following on Instagram or TikTok. So you might as well jump on here and talk to us, ask your very own questions, and you can get access to one-on-one coaching with me through the Patreon. Sign up. The link is in the show notes.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, leadership, or teaching journey. And today we have the Speech Sisters with us. And we're just going to dive right into it. I'm going to let them introduce themselves as usual, and then we'll dive into the questions. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
All right. Well, I'm Brooke.
I'm Bridget.
And we're the Speech Sisters. We really are sisters, and we are moms, and we are speech-language pathologists. Yes. Yeah.
We started this Instagram. We, prior to that, we currently do have a private practice, which we opened in 2012. And we specialized in early intervention and really a lot of parent coaching, and just saw how important it is for parents to be involved in their child's communication journey and just getting parents involved and seeing the huge difference that that can make. So I think about 2 years ago, I was like, how can we reach more people? Yeah. And Brooke's husband was like, Instagram, go digital, girls. Yeah. So we did it. And it was just the best thing we ever did, because I feel like rather than, you know, just helping a handful of families like we could do in our private practice, we've been able to reach hundreds of thousands of families internationally.
Yeah, it's been really amazing.
Yeah, that's really great. And one of my community members actually jumped on to thank you for your work, because you guys have given her some really great tips and strategies and approach, and probably even just ways to think about language with our child, which has really helped him develop his speech. So thank you guys for all the work you do. Let's go ahead and, you know, let's dive into questions. Especially you guys were just talking about how much you've been able to help and how important it is. Why? First, let me ask you, why did you get into this work? Why did you become a speech-language pathologist?
So for me, I started off as a special education teacher, and I worked with kindergartners. So I worked with the little ones, and I just really wanted to get down to like the root and the foundation of, you know, how they became who they were in kindergarten and why. And I knew that in order to do that, I had to get down to like the language level. And I was so interested in that. So that's why I went to school to be a speech and language pathologist. And then I told her to do the same.
Yeah.
My little sister.
And I just followed her lead. Although I did my undergrad before Brooke. So I was kind of, you know, got my feet wet and did my undergrad work in communication disorders. And then I took like 5 years off, and Brooke went back being a special education teacher to become a speech pathologist, and was like, you have to go back. You have to get your master's and finish this. And once I went back, I couldn't have imagined it in another way.
Mm, wow. Yeah, it sounds like you guys have really been supporting each other kind of through this journey. And now you guys are a super team. So why is it sounds like something that you guys are both really passionate about. why is it, it's, is developing speech so important? What kind of things, you know, what kind of struggles do people go through who don't maybe have access to your tips and your tricks, your tricks, and, you know, why is it so important?
So, sorry, we lost you for a second there.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay,
but wait. I don't see you.
Yeah, I don't, I'm not sure what happened. Can you repeat the question? Sorry, we couldn't hear you.
Yeah, no, you're good. Why is, you know, developing speech so important? Why is the work you do so important?
I mean, it's, speech is everything. Like, communicating is everything. Without communication, I mean, how can we interact as human beings? It is just everything. It really is. It's problem solving. It's making friends. It's socializing. It's negotiating. It's, you know, it's important from the beginning. And like, that's what we really focus on. But it is important as we grow up through the rest of our lives. And even academically, it is so important.
Yeah,
so
it's really the foundation for all the academic skills that will come later for a child. And so, you know, a lot of times parents don't understand this or realize it. And it is huge. It is so imperative that they get that solid language foundation in order to, you know, have these skills blossom as they get older.
Hmm. You guys talked about, so you guys have a private practice. And I guess what behaviors, because I'm trying to almost work this back a little bit. What behaviors do you typically observe from the children who are needing your services and your help?
That's a great question. So there's a lot of different kids that we work with, a lot of different types of delays and disabilities, but primarily we focus on these kiddos kind of in early intervention. So oftentimes they are late to talk. So they might be, you know, 18 months old, maybe 24 months old, and they're just not meeting their expressive language milestones. So they don't have as many words as they probably should have for their age. And that's the big like red flag where, you know, maybe they're at the pediatrician and they're asking these questions and they say, oh, well, hold on. You should have more, you know, he should have more words at this point in time. And so that's where we come in and we give these kiddos the boost that they need. But that's just one area. We also work with kids that have, you know, speech articulation issues. So that's how they produce speech sounds. For example, a child might have a lisp or they might not consonants and words.
So it's kind of like all over the map, I think. But for those late talkers behaviorally, a lot of times they're showing signs of frustration and they're not able to communicate their wants and their needs. And they know what they want and need. They are just not able to communicate it. So many times that comes out with through tantrums, and just challenging behaviors, you know, for both the child and parents. And a lot of it does come back to communication and giving the child, I think that the ultimate goal is giving the child a method to communicate, a mode to communicate. And it's verbal. What else can we use to allow the child to be able to get their needs and wants met? Maybe it's sign language, maybe it's pictures, maybe it's, you know, an AAC device, whatever that may be.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I see this all the time too. Children who struggle to communicate, you know, they have these big emotions really trapped inside of their body. And there's only a few ways that they can really get it out, right? And it's either going to come out physically with, you know, a tantrum or throwing themselves on the ground or hitting or biting or crying or expressing how they feel. And that's when they're actually able to start to, you know, problem solve the problem. Because I just imagine, like, think about if, you know, someone took something of mine that I really wanted, someone's in my space and I felt really uncomfortable by it, but I had no tools to actually express how I feeling or to get the child away. You know, I'd probably go to the only tool I had, which is the instinctual, like, get away, push, hit, bite, kick, and it works. But yeah, we want to teach them better ways to, you know, express themselves and to solve the problem. I agree. I think like speech is a huge part of that.
Absolutely.
And I see this a lot with the kind of closing in the toddler age, closing in onto almost to a little over to, and especially when it seems that they're starting to understand more, they're starting to want to assert their independence and their self-concept is expanding, but then they don't have the words for it. How do you help those children? Give us some like tips or some things that you, for specifically, you know, expressing emotion. What are some things that we can do to help children express the emotion so it doesn't stay trapped inside their body?
Right. That's such a good question. I think like first is, you know, for a child, if they're not able to talk, I think it's just helping them get that message across. First, like we're getting their attention and letting them know that we are paying attention, getting on their level, getting face to face with them. That is huge. Yep. So that they can see that we see them, that we hear them, that we're there for them to support them in that moment.
And then also empathizing with how they're feeling, right? So if they don't have a word or they can't say the word for how they're feeling, but we can say it for them and we can give them that word. Okay. So, you know, you're down on their level. I see that you are feeling really sad right now, feeling really mad right now because something happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then sort of, so again, you know, you're modeling these words, you're giving them these words so that they can start to understand and hopefully eventually down the road start to use them. And then, you know, we do a lot of giving kids like this, giving them choices. So if they're frustrated over something because, you know, we're not understanding what they're saying or somebody stole their toy or whatever the situation is, giving them choices as to how they want to solve the problem. Okay. So that they can, intangible choices work really well because it's something they can like point to, right? Mm-hmm. So in the event that the situation allows for something like that, that really helps. I also, like I actually just said, like we'll say, show me what you want, show me what you need. And, you know, whether that be you pick the child up and you follow them to where they're pointing, or if they're walking and grab their hand, let them guide you. Mm-hmm. And again, all giving them words and you're explaining what they are trying to tell you.
Exactly. That's the most. And the situations do happen quite frequently where like sometimes they're too upset and maybe the tantrum's a little bit too severe and they're not able to work through it in that moment. Therefore, they can't tell you and you can't figure it out. So I think like we always just tell parents, you want to try to take your best guess. If you gave it a try, you tried to get them to lead you to it. You tried to get them to show them choices. At that point, you have to try to take your best guess, see what their response is, watch their body language, their gestures in that moment. And if that doesn't work, just kind of being honest with them. I don't understand right now. Mommy doesn't understand it. I'm sorry. And then trying to redirect towards something else.
Yeah. And I think sometimes too, it's just sometimes children get really upset and get really overwhelmed in emotion. And sometimes it's, you know, having the perspective that it's okay for them to be frustrated about it. And, you know, maybe we even did get it right, but they're still really upset and dysregulated. You know, sometimes we're able to express how we feel, but we're still upset and we still want to be mad about it for a little bit of time. And that's okay. To be frustrated. And so Tiffany actually brought up something, one of our, you know, community members, and she said that, and I didn't hear quite what she said, but she said that there was some tip that you gave that was really helpful. And it, I think it had something to do with three times, or repeating three times. Tell everyone what that is. So everyone else can count as much as Tiffany.
Yes. So yes, that's our tip to repeat again and again.
Yeah. So you're kind of like a broken record, which sometimes can make you feel a little crazy, but it works. When we always say, and we say this in our course, when you repeat, they will remember. So it's just being consistent. And if you are in a moment where you're trying to highlight a word, repeat that word 3 to 5 times, because it can really be helpful and getting first the child to understand the word and the concept, and then eventually getting the child to use that word expressively.
First getting them to understand and then getting them to use it expressively. So how do you get them to understand it? And then how do you get them to use it expressively?
So in terms of the understanding, we will say the word, like Bridget said, repeat it. But you also want to try to show them whatever that word is, whether it's an object or an action. If it's an object, you're going to grab that object or point to that object. If it's an action, do the action while you say it. So you're bringing meaning to the word. That is how we get them to understand. And then with the expressive piece, you want to model it. You want to repeat it and you want to model it for them. Say it over and over. Simplify your language so that, let's just say you're trying to get your little one to learn the word ball. You don't want to say, oh, look, there's a big ball over there. Let's go get that ball. There's a ball in the, like, really fat. You know, you don't want to, that's going to go over their head. That's a little too much. So you want to slow down. You want to simplify and really just focus on that word. Ball. Oh, big ball. Let's throw the ball. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing, like Brooke just did with her voice, we call that parent ease. So you could hear how she was kind of talking in a almost like a sing-songy exaggerated speaking style. And research shows that that kind of speaking style can be so beneficial when talking to babies and young toddlers, because it is proven to grab their attention. And when you grab your baby's attention, they are engaged with you, they are watching you, and it leads to more language learning opportunities.
Yeah. Is that a difference? Because some people, well, what about baby talk? Because, and talk a little bit about that. And, you know, do you distinguish between it? Talk.
Yeah. So there is good baby talk and there is not so good baby talk. And so what Bridget just described, this parent ease voice, is the good type of baby talk. And people will say, because it sounds a little something like this, oh, I see your nose, you know, and it's that sing-songy voice, but it's good because you are saying real words. You are using correct grammar. Okay. The bad type of baby talk, or the not so good type, is when you're not using real words and you're using incorrect grammar. Do you want to
give an example? Yeah. So it'd be like, oh, do you want your milky? Oh, mama gonna, you too tinky. You know, like words that are not made up. And let me just tell you, I totally say tinky. Like everyone, I say Stella's diaper, I'm like, you a tinky girl. Like, don't think that I don't do that, because I think all parents have a little guilty pleasure of baby talk. Yes. It's okay. You just don't want to be doing it all the time. And then you do want to get some of that parent ease in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man, I wish I could see your faces right now.
I know.
And, you know, sometimes it's like we're teaching vocabulary to children, but sometimes they teach us kind of like new, maybe like baby talk. You know, one child I know says, you know, family nap. And like, they're, you know, parents can't help but to say, like, because it's so cute and like adorable. And so like, that's what they say now where they, you know, talk about a family nap. They say, you want a family nap, but just in a playful way. And I think, I mean, kind of like to your point, I think, you know, you can have fun with it at the end of the day. Like, it's not going to ruin their speech. But if you want to help develop their speech, you know, the parent tease is how you do it as opposed to the baby talk.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
And I want to actually kind of throw a little bit of language, kind of dig into my Montessori background a little bit and talk about the three-period lesson, which is a little bit like what you guys were talking about. Before I do that, you know, real quick, I think one of the powerful things about the parentese is that, you know, you're emphasizing certain words. And I think that is, you know, that's something that's really engaging to children when you do have that emphasis, like when you are emphasizing certain words and you kind of have a little bit of a cadence in your voice. But for the Montessori method, are you guys familiar with the three-period lesson?
No, not really.
Cool. I'm excited. Yes. Like it's probably something that you guys, maybe it's called something else or like you guys already do it, but I'm going to do like an example. So it's, this is show me. And then it is them. And then the third period is them using it. So for example, it'd be, this is a pen. And you know, you wouldn't just say, this is a pen. This three-period lesson can happen over the course of, you know, days, weeks, just whenever they show they're ready to go to the next lesson is when you go to the next lesson. So you start with, this is a pen, and you can do the parent, this is a pen, like, oh, this is a pen. And then the next part is, show me the pen. So now I have like two objects, and now show me the pen. Now they get to point to the pen. Now they get to grab the pen, right? Or grab the pen, and then they grab the pen. Uh-huh. And then the last period is, you know, what is? And now you just have the thing up. You're no longer using the vocabulary word. They go, what is this? And then they say, the pen. Now the way you go about it, that's like a super simplified version, but the way you go about it is, once they get to the second period, like let's say this is a pen, this is a pen, this is a pen. And then, okay, they seem like they kind of got it. Then you go to the second period and you're like, oh, show me the pen. And then they, you know, pick the book. That's how you know you need to go back to the first period and keep using that language and showing them the pen and picture the pen or whatever, pointing, oh, that's the pen, whatever it is. And then once they get that, we can go to the next one. And so I'm just curious. I just wanted to kind of share that with you guys and just curious what your thoughts are.
It's so funny because it's virtually our language ladder in our toddler course that we talk about. So basically we talk about the foundation, okay? And that's the ground. That's the receptive language. That's understanding language. Then there's a ladder, and then the ladder goes up and it's like, gestures at the bottom rung of the ladder, then like using one word, and then using two words, sentences, and so on as you go up the ladder. And it's just basically exactly what you're describing, because the tiers that you're describing are, this is a pen, right? You're not expecting anything from them at that point. You are building that foundation. You are making that solid ground, because that understanding has to come before they're going to expressively identify something. So that is what it reminded me of. And then the second one being like, show me the pen, that also dips into the understanding, right? Gesture. They need to, and gesture. Yeah. So it's kind of a mix of moving from that solid ground into that first rung of using a gesture to identify. And it's like that in between understanding and starting to expressively use the word. And then the next tier, the final tier, is actually answering the question, what is this? And expressively saying the word pen, which is virtually the second rung on our language ladder. So it's so funny. Yes. We're like, we thought we developed that model. No, I'm just kidding. I guess it was Montessori.
Maria Montessori, way ahead of her time.
Right? Wow. Yeah.
But it sounds like kind of you guys explained it in a more detailed manner than I did. But that's how I learned. And I used it, not just, we didn't just use it for vocabulary, but really any kind of concept. It's a way to think about really any kind of concept that you teach and just kind of what level of understanding they have. And one of the things, another thing too, is we used to have, like for like if for advanced language, we used to, for our prep JK, for our 3 and 4 year old program, we start big, bold, beautiful words were something that we was like incorporated into the curriculum. And the most powerful way, as you guys were kind of saying, the most powerful way, because it was always my goal as a teacher, like, okay, like how much can I like teach them? Like how much can, how much understanding can, will they have by the end of, by the end of the week or by the end of the month? And so, if let's say the word was, or we were, maybe it's water cycle or it's disappointment. Disappointment's a good one because it's, you know, it's a feeling, but it's kind of like a little bit more nuanced than just, you know, angry or sad. I would go so far out of my way to use the word disappointment and just like even things I wasn't like really disappointed by. I was like, oh man, I thought we were going to have tacos for lunch. I'm so disappointed. And yeah. just be to the point where I was obnoxious about it. And they were kind of know that I was obnoxious about it. And it kind of became a thing. But it was so effective. And then, like, inevitably, there would always be a few by the end of the week of me doing that, that they would start to use the word properly in context. Too. So I would just say to anyone out there who is like, like I really want, especially when it comes to emotions, like I'm very, really big on teaching children to express their emotions and using those and accurately. That's kind of a way to, that's a way to help you help them with expressing that language. I want to ask another question. What are some favorite things that you guys used with, you know, developing language with your own children? What are some like favorite techniques or some favorite, you know, activities, anything? Yeah. Just throw it out there.
So our big thing is we are busy parents, just like most of the parents who are probably listening to this. In this day and age, we have a million things going through our head. We have a to-do list that never ends. And I think what it comes down to is we just, all of our kids, all five of our kids, because we have five kids in total, were early communicators and early talkers. Yeah. And our friends would be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that she's talking or he's talking. It's just because you guys are speech therapists.
Yeah, like what do? Sit down and do speech therapy with them all day? And we were like, no. We just, you know how to talk to them with the intent of building their language. And it's actually really not that hard. It's not rocket science. Like anybody can do it. And so I think one of the biggest things is really talking through your day and talking about what you're doing.
And that's why everything that we kind of teach and preach is you can do this during your everyday routines. You can do this during everything you're already doing. You don't have to carve out extra time to do speech. It's just kind of tweaking your interactions to build their language. And that is what, you know, that is our whole mission. And it's exactly why we did what we did. But exactly what Brooke was just saying, like talking through what you're doing in the moment that you're doing it. And we did that from the beginning with them, like the beginning. Like I think Stella, who's my youngest, she's the youngest of the five. And she's now, you know, 28 months old. But she, at like 9 months old, I would pour my coffee and she'd be like, pour, pour. And she'd say, hot, hot. And people were like, we would put on Instagram, people are like, what is going on here? Like, how is she even doing this?
But why did she do that?
Because every single day I said it. I had her on my hip as I poured my coffee. Pour, pour the coffee. Oh, it's hot. It's hot.
Yeah.
And it's every day. And it's that repetition.
Right.
When you repeat, they remember.
Yeah.
And I noticed that when you said hot, you were very, you didn't just say it twice, you said hot. You were very intentional about it.
And she did that too.
She did. She did. That does work. If you emphasize those sounds, they get that too. I want to say one other thing that I think is so, so important. And as parents, we do this all the time and we do it without realizing it. And it's something that it's important to be mindful of it. And I mean, even Bridget and I, as speech therapists and moms, we still did it all the time with our kids, but we try to be mindful. So you want to try to stop stealing communication opportunities from your child. And I say, what I mean by that is, again, we're busy parents, we're moving at the speed of life and everything's crazy. And, you know, let's just say it's lunchtime and you're feeding your little one. And it's so easy to just be like, here you go, here's your turkey, here's your milk, here's that, you know, but it doesn't have to be that way. In fact, if you just wait and pause and stop and say, what do you want first? Do you want your turkey or do you want your milk? You know, give them that choice. Mm-hmm. Or maybe just don't give them anything. Just sit there. Let them sit there and see what happens. They're going to be like, what's going on? Why isn't she giving me my food? You know, and they just might say something.
Our whole thing is like sabotage the environment, manipulate the situation, like kind of throw a wrench into things. So maybe that you put them in the high chair, you bring over their water cup and it's like, it's empty. There's no water in it. What's your toddler going to do then? You just set up a communication opportunity. Mm-hmm. Even if they throw it on the floor and they're mad, you have the opportunity to go, uh-oh, I forgot your water, silly mama. Let's get the water. Let's pour the water. And you just repeated that word and gave them a communication opportunity rather than just hand it over.
Yeah, that is really great. And that makes me think of, like, because language, speech, it's a tool. And I notice even with the signs and using signs with young children, when we teach children signs that are tools for them to get things and obtain things that they care about, they tend to learn those things a lot more quickly. And so setting up, I love that you guys said kind of sabotage the environment. So they have to rely on those tools. And what you guys just talked about too, like the milk or water, like that's the second period of the three period lesson.
Right. Yes.
And maybe they don't say anything and they don't have words, and you know, and that's maybe a cue for you to know, like, okay, maybe next time when I'm giving the water, I'm giving the cup, like I need to make sure that I'm saying water, or, you know, cup, milk, whatever it is. Yes.
Sabotage can be amazing. And I just did the best sabotage on Stella. Okay. It's on an Instagram post. You'll have to check it out. I took a baby doll, one of her baby dolls, and I put peanut butter in the baby doll's diaper. And I said, oh no, Stella, I think your baby doll pooped. Let me tell you, that set up the most amazing communication opportunity. I was like, I just took sabotage to the next level.
Yes.
It was hilarious.
Yes.
I'm on the edge. What did she say?
Oh my gosh. I mean, everything. Like it's all in this little IGTV video that we have. But she's just like,
ew, yuck,
baby poop. Like, yeah, baby poop. I don't want that baby. I want new baby. I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. I was like,
mommy, you clean the baby.
You clean it. I mean, one thing after another. And I'm like, see, guys, I was like, we can sabotage in any way.
Yes.
And that kind of reminds me of that. I don't know if you guys saw that trend when the parents ask the child to bring toilet paper into the bathroom. And when they hand it to them, they have like chocolate on their hand and they rub the chocolate on the child's hand. No. And the child kind of sits there and usually most of them are kind of like just stunned. That sounds like another sabotaging moment.
Totally. I might try that with my 5-year-old. That'll be funny.
I have another question. Me being like, music is something that's really close to my heart and something that when I first went in the classroom, I didn't realize like how powerful of a teaching tool it was. But, you know, even especially in my role as an educational specialist where I'm not with, you know, the same group of children every day anymore. But I will sing these songs, and like kind of the way that I connect is through songs. And I notice that even like the young ones, like some of their first words are words in the songs that I'm singing, because I'm kind of like, I'm coming in, I'm bringing this experience. And when they see me, they make that association, and like, you know, they'll call, you know, they'll see me and they'll say down by the bay, or they say bubble. And these are like toddlers. And these are like some of their first words. So what is your take and perspective and like on the role that music plays in developing speech?
It's huge.
It is.
It's huge. Yeah. We love it. Huge advocates for music because it's repetitive. You know, a lot of the songs are repetitive, and then they're also the rhyming. And then just the tune of music stimulates a different area of the brain. Yes. Like when you sing, it stimulates a different area of the brain than talking. So it just, I think it just clicks with kids and babies, and it also grabs their attention. They're like, whoa, this is fun. There's movements and gestures, and there's so much to it. Yes. That I think it's just, it's such an amazing tool. And we love music and all of those early developing songs to develop concepts. It's a great way to take those concepts and then generalize them.
And imitation, it's great for imitation. So, you know, before a child can imitate a sound or a word, typically they will imitate a body movement. And so the songs that have, you know, finger plays and things like that are amazing for working on kind of that beginning phase of imitation, which then will translate over to, you know, imitating sounds and words. And we just can't say enough good things about music, and you know, we certainly incorporate it into our any therapy session, and also gosh, when our kids were little, I mean, I feel like we just sang 24/7.
Oh yeah, I still do.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone loves music. I'm almost going back a little bit, because now, Tiffany, on the side, when you were talking about the term that I'm used to hearing is sports casting, in terms of narrating, you know, what they're doing, but also the self-talk of narrating what you're doing. So like, and I'll do it all the time in a classroom for any teachers out there listening, or even any parents who are, you know, you're busy and you're in the middle of doing something, but you kind of want to keep your child like entertained and busy for the moment, but you have to do, like maybe you're getting the plate out to serve the food. Narrate that whole thing that you're doing. I will, because sometimes they're like, you know, there'll be children at the table and they'll be really hungry and ready for the food, and it's just one of me and 10 of them. And so I'll start to talk about what I'm doing, and I'm like, oh, so first thing I have to get, what is the first thing I have to get before I serve the food? I wash my hands. Now I need to get the gloves. Okay, so I'm putting on one glove. I'm putting on two, and just narrating the whole process. And then also, especially for children who are really young, and you know, they're just, you know, they're you know, maybe they're dropping the ball, and like, oh look, you dropped the ball, and now you're going to go chase it. Why don't you guys model? Because you guys would be a lot better than I am at modeling what that would sound like. You know, think of maybe like an interaction and model kind of what that would sound like for us.
You do it absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, you do.
And what it is, you know, the term for it is self and parallel talk. Yeah. So you want to talk about what you are doing as you do it, exactly what you were saying. So that's kind of similar to what I was describing before with Stella, when I said, I'm going to get my coffee. I'm pouring the coffee. The coffee is hot, and kind of just talking. And then the other area is talking about what the child is doing.
Exactly. And so I'm trying to think about a good example for parallel talk. So when we're talking about what the child's doing, I mean, I guess if they're playing with a toy, let's say they are playing with blocks. And so, oh, you're playing with your blocks. You just stacked your bottle. You went up. Oh, good job. You're putting the blocks up, up. You know, something you like
knock
that.
Them down. Yes. So giving them the words through what they're doing. And I think it's great too, because it models that perspective taking and pronouns. And we just always like to focus on, in our course, we talk about this a lot in our toddler course, about focusing on other areas of speech other than just nouns, because I think parents get somewhat stuck in a noun rut, being like, there's the helicopter, there's the airplane, look a house, look a kitty cat, you know, and just labeling those things, people, places, and things over and over.
Which
and
is great.
But we need a verb to make a sentence. So if we want to get them climbing up that language ladder, like we talked about before, it's modeling those other areas of speech too. So, you know, saying I'm pouring the coffee, or you are stacking the blocks, or that's my shirt, this is your shirt. Pronouns and verbs and
And we love to highlight this and do this during routines. And this is something we talk about a lot in both of our courses, but you know, talking through your routines, whether it's what you're doing or what your child's doing, because the things you do every day, like every day you probably put your child in and out of a car, right? Mm-hmm. So talk about that. I'm opening the door. Here you go. Open the door. Yeah.
And it goes back to what you were saying, like even being in the classroom and modeling that word disappointment or disappointed to your students. Every day that week, right? Monday through Friday, you kind of were relentless repeating it. And then by the end of the week, they're like, I'm disappointed. Because when you repeat, you remember. And it's the same when they're little as when they're in school. And it's just, that's what builds language, no matter where a child is.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm using that trick for my third grader who is now taking vocabulary tests, and I'm going to be using her vocabulary words throughout our day all week long. I'm going to start that. That will help. I love that.
Yeah. No, it's fun too, especially like when you get into it and you can be, I'm a cheesy person. So I like to be just like, and I don't care about the other teacher in the room who may or may not be judging me.
I love it. That's so great.
Yeah. I have one more question that I wanted to talk about, because I know sometimes there's like people have different opinions about sign language. And you guys mentioned earlier, what are your thoughts on teaching children sign language, and how do you go about it, and why would you go about it?
We say go for it.
Yeah.
Research says go for it.
It does not delay your child's speech and language skills. For the most part, research shows that it can help your child's speech and language skills and develop it even more. And signs do count as words. So, you know, oftentimes parents will say, you know, how many words should my child have, or, you know, what counts as a word, and signs do count.
Yes, they are words.
It's a great way to get your baby communicating before they're ready or able to use sounds or words. So we often say to, you know, from the beginning, pair the sign with the word, of course. We always say that. So, you know, if the goal is to teach your child to say the word, you always want to say the word along with the sign. So, for example,
if the goal was just for your child to sign, you know, like in the deaf and hard of hearing community, then you obviously do not need to do that. Your method of communication would just be signing, as that is the language. Yeah. And that's how you would communicate. But with little ones, if you do want them to talk, we, you know, often will sign more or all done as we pair it with the verbal word.
And we'll do that every time we say it, you know, and I mean, I'd say 9 times out of 10, they will learn the sign for more before or at the same time they learn the word, right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then I think the other thing we love to kind of focus on, functional and iconic signs. So functional meaning signs that get needs and wants met. So words like more or all done. And then iconic, which kind of the sign looks almost like you're gesturing what the meaning of the word is. So drink, you kind of like look like you're holding a cup and bring it to your mouth. Or eat, you're bringing your hands to your mouth almost like you're eating a piece of pizza or something. Right. So it's almost like acting it out. So we love those kinds of signs. Mm.
Well, great. This was a pleasure having you guys on. So much great information in here. A lot of people are going to be so grateful to listen to this podcast. Why don't you guys just share where people can find you, anything that like you can, you know, this is space to talk about your courses if you'd like to. The floor is yours.
All right. So on Instagram, we're at Speech Sisters, and we have a website, which is speechsisters.com.
We have two courses. We have one for parents of babies, newborn through about 14 months old. And that one is called Talk on Track. And it is designed to help parents learn how to help their child meet those communication milestones in those early stages. And we call it Help Your Child Climb the Noisy Steps, moving from cooing to babbling and into those first words. And then our toddler course is called Time to Talk Toddler Course, and it's designed for parents ages 14 months through 36 months. And that's more getting children to start saying lots of first words and expanding their language into 2, 3, 4-word utterances, getting them into sentences and climbing that language ladder to the next steps.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for being on. I wish I could have seen your people for this conversation. I could feel your energy here.
Right. Yes.
Okay. It just means that we have to have another conversation sometime in the future.
Please.
See each other's faces. But
we would love that. We would absolutely love that. Thank you for having us.
What's my name? What's my name? What's